discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
On October 8, 1978, a Canadian named William Dyson stepped off a plane at O'Hare International Airport and proceeded toward customs and immigration. 2 days later, William Dyson ceased to exist. The identity was a KGB forgery used to get one of their own, a young, ambitious East German agent, into the United States. The plan succeeded, and the spy's new identity was born. Jack Barsky. He would work undercover for the next decade, carrying out secret operations at the height of the Cold War, until a surprising shift in his allegiances challenged everything he thought he believed. The new book, Deep Undercover, reveals this story no one ever expected him to tell. And I must say, this is one of the most ear-catching setups we've ever been able to do, Jack. A hearty welcome to you, sir. Thank you so much for letting us take the time with you today.
Well, thanks for having me, and I appreciate the compliment. I'm not sure if I can take the credit or my editor, their teamwork. You know, if anybody ever claims to have written a book by themselves, they're probably lying.
Well, it is said, good sir, that every great story is best told from the beginning. So can you transport us back to growing up in East Germany first and paint the picture of what youth was like in the shadow of the Iron Curtain?
We just pretty much thought we had a great childhood. We, in terms of material well-being, no, the one thing I had going for me and my parents, that I always had a roof over my head. And I grew up in a country setting, and both of my parents were teachers, so they had priority with getting assigned living quarters. The other thing that wasn't a problem was security. This was a dictatorial type state that pretty much clamped down on any type of crime. So us kids would be running around without supervision. Where the problem was, and even as it occurred, as a child, I was already aware of it, was nutrition. We did not have, sufficient nutrition as well as medical care.
Well, as you grew then, as you grew in stature and as you grew in understanding of the world around you, did you become a true believer in the Soviet system? What was your attitude toward the West?
Yes. The answer was, I'm fundamentally a contrarian. That's runs in my DNA, and I ran into trouble in middle school and in high school just by challenging teachers. So I didn't easily join. We had all kinds of organizations that you need to belong to, which was almost mandatory. It's the Young Pioneers, then the Free German Youth, and eventually the Party. The Party, that was a different story. The Party only let in people that they actually wanted. But anyway, I wasn't much, I didn't like to run with a crowd, so it took a while to convince me that where that crowd was going is the right direction. Mm. And it was just a massive dose of ideology from every angle, whether that was in school, whether that was in the home, whether it was, through the various organizations that you could join and that you could participate in, as well as the media. There was just only one message, and the message was that we are the future. We, meaning communism, communist society, and our generation, we were going to just participate in fundamentally changing the world. And, this is an emotional type message, which is very appealing to a young person, particularly, the idea of communism is very appealing to young people. We see shades of that nowadays in, the rising appeal of socialism.
Yeah.
But coupled with that emotional appeal was the what we called the social science. We were taught that Marxism-Leninism, and I don't know why I never questioned that, but we didn't, was on par, scientifically speaking, with physics. So, and there was a clear progression of human society from feudalism, no, from slavery to feudalism to capitalism to eventually socialism. And that's where we were going. And indeed, I was emotionally as well as intellectually 100% convinced that this was the right thing. It was the right belief, and it was the right cause to support for me personally.
A fascinating window into the early life of Mr. Jack Barsky. He's the remarkable man behind the stunning story of Cold War intrigue and redemption, detailed in his new book, Deep Undercover, My Secret Life and Tangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. So you've detailed your attitude toward communism. What about your attitude toward God and faith? Was that even something that was on your radar at this point in your life?
Not really. This is interesting in that, and as you well know, that Germany has a very, very strong Christian tradition, and the communist state and the party managed to choke off the faith in such a way that it was still existing, but it existed at the fringes of society. And since my father was a member of the party, and he eventually became a principal of a middle school, the church was not part of our lives at all. So we had Christmas, and it was all about Santa Claus. Literally, I had no idea it was supposed to be celebrating the birth of Jesus. We had Easter, and it was not about the cross. It was about the Easter bunny and eggs.
Sure.
No, there was no faith in my upbringing whatsoever.
As we advance the story, then, you grow and you grow brighter, you grow more studious, you're on course to teach science at a university, and then the KGB knocks on your door. How did you come to their attention, Jack?
I was a National Honor student. I received a scholarship that was given to only about 60 or 70 students across the entire nation every year. And I was active in the party. I was such a standout that anybody who was fishing for recruits for whatever, I would get it onto their radar screen. And that's not a surprise. You know, the CIA used to recruit primarily from Ivy League schools. Both the East German intelligence and KGB had access to records of college students, and this is, I can picture somebody in an office looking through there and say, oh, look, let's pull this one out and see if we can do something with him.
Wow. You spend 5 years then being trained for a specific mission. What did you understand to be your plan?
The plan itself wasn't even specifically and directly, explicitly shared with me. All I knew when I said, okay, I'm in, is that I was going to go undercover someplace in the West. The natural guess was that to be West Germany, because I spoke German, right? And it was so easy to smuggle an East German into West Germany and hide there in plain sight. The only question in my mind was, why would they send me to West Germany when the Stasi, East German intelligence, had already several hundred secret agents in the West? I never asked that question. It doesn't matter. Eventually, it turned out that my ability to learn English carried the day, and I knew in my third year of at the end of my second year of training that I was going to go to the United States.
You describe it in the book now, looking back, as an idiotic adventure, but you were certainly well prepared for it. I mean, how did the wheels begin to be set in motion? How did you make that journey to America?
You know, I got very, very good language training, and I also got very, very good operational training. This is how, you know, you interact with the, you know, your handlers, with the center, you know, how you find out whether you're being observed, investigated, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
That was excellent. But none of these guys that were working with me had any clue what it's like to be an American.
Huh.
They may have lived for some time in the United States, but they lived in the U.S. as outsiders, and they looked at the U.S. As outsiders. They didn't have a clue. I got some instructions that were laughably wrong, but, you know, I found it out one by one by one. And I got lucky that I didn't trip up early on with some of the mistakes that I made inadvertently, because I give you one example. I'm sorry I'm rambling on, but this is really interesting. I was already in the United States for about 5 years, and here I am. I went back to college. I got a degree. And I didn't realize that when, you know, I aced college, I had all A's, and I didn't realize that translated into something like called valedictorian. So when the dean called me to his office, I almost fell off my chair. He told me, "Well, you got to give a speech." Well, that's the last thing an undercover agent would want. But that was still like residual lack of knowledge of how American society works.
That's the voice of Jack Barsky. He's the remarkable man behind the stunning story of Cold War intrigue and redemption, detailed in his new book, Deep Undercover: My Secret Life and Tangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. So how do you even begin? I mean, what are the first steps that you take when you come to the United States toward accomplishing your mission?
Well, you tread very carefully, because all I had on me at that point that I could use as not even ID, but a certified copy of a birth certificate under this name. And so with that, I parlayed that into initially a library card, then a driver's license, a social security card. Anyway, so that's how I slowly, you know, my first job was bike messenger, and then I studied again. I became a computer programmer, and eventually I had a pretty successful career in corporate America.
I mean, I can't help but ask you about this, because we've all seen it in the movies. So to read it in your book as a reality was pretty remarkable, but the way that you communicated with Moscow, as detailed in your book, is pretty epic. These clandestine shortwave radio transmissions, coded messages, and drop-off locations. Can you give us a little bit of a summary of how that worked?
Yeah, by the way, it's when you do it, it's not so epic. It's just pretty boring, and it takes a long time. Every Thursday, invariably, over the period of 10 years, Thursday at 9:15 in the evening, I would switch on a shortwave radio and look for a particular frequency where I could, on which I would get Morse code, would write it down, then decrypt it, and then, you know, destroy all the evidence that, notes, I would not keep any notes. If there was something to be kept, I kept it in my head, memory. And I've told by friends in law enforcement here that this is still in use. It's been around, maybe not shortwave, but, you know, signals and all that has been around since like 2,000 years ago.
Well, Mr. Jack Barsky is with us today. His book is Deep Undercover: My Secret Life and Tangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. And there is so much story to tell here that I really do recommend that you get a chance to read the book, because it is amazing. But to bring this thing full circle in the last 6 minutes that we have here, Jack, I mean, you have an amazing statement you make. You've said before, there was nothing like we were taught, nothing that I expected. I wanted to really hate the people and the country, and I couldn't bring myself to hate them, not even to dislike them. Were you surprised by your attitude towards Americans?
Well, not really, because this evolved gradually. And this is one thing that I tell people now, you know, my quote-unquote detoxification from, you know, being an atheistic communist to who I am today, a believer in Jesus, anti-communist, took a period of 20 years. it just happened. But I believe I'm now on very firm ground.
The straw that actually broke the camel's back in terms of your service with the KGB comes as you then meet and fall in love with a young woman here in the U.S., you get married, you have a child. So now, in addition to your two identities, you have two families. And yeah. In 1988, they finally led you to do something extraordinary. Can you take us through that moment, that the straw that broke the camel's back, as it were?
Yeah, and it was a personal decision. In 1988, late in 88, I got a signal that was set by one of my handlers that indicated to me that there was danger. And this signal pretty much told me, get out of there, get out of the country, we're bringing you home. It's an emergency. But unbeknownst to the center, I had a child. At that time, she was 18 months old. And this is where it sounds like really sort of contrived, banal, but there's a statement that applies 100% here. Love conquers everything. I loved that child so much that it ripped my heart out if I had to, imagine not ever having the ability to see her, not even being able to support her, because to admit to the KGB that I had a child in this country would have been insubordinate and they would have punished me. So after, several weeks of agonizing, I decided that I would just tell the KGB I quit, and so I did.
And because of the creativity that you exercised in the way that you communicated with them, the KGB really did leave you alone for years, right?
Yes.
Were you surprised by that?
They did. They believed the lie that I concocted. I told them that I had contracted HIV/AIDS. As such, the USA would be the only country at the time where I could expect some kind of treatment. And they bought it, and I have enough proof of that, and some of that is in the book. And yes, they absolutely left me alone, and I have not heard from any one of them, at least that I'm not aware that I have heard from anyone since my quote-unquote resignation in 1988.
You live for years in peace after this. Finally, you do come to the attention of the FBI. They set up shop in the house next to you. They bug your house, and finally, this conversation with your ex-wife becomes the thing that reveals your true identity to the Americans, right?
We had one of those, increasingly in frequency spats, marital spats, and I tried to, I was trying to use what I called the nuclear option to tell her what I sacrificed to be with her and with Chelsea, my daughter. And I, admitted openly, listen, I used to be an undercover agent and I stayed here, I defied the Russians because I loved both of you. And that, A, that backfired, and B, that got a confession on tape for the FBI. I had no clue that they were taping me at the time, obviously.
One of the most amazing parts of the entire book, of course, is the conversation that you then have with the FBI. How shocked were you, as a former intelligence operative, that they let you go when they said, you're free to go, Jack?
Obviously, this is not something you expect. There's always a chance that, you go to jail. There's a chance that they may want to turn you. But, I wasn't turnable because I wasn't active anymore. So I had no clue, what was going to happen. I wasn't really shocked. I was very much concerned, and for a period of about 2 to 3 months, I was pretty much stressed because I was worried about the kids and my wife. But shock is not, again, it's the same thing as with the other question. This is stuff that evolves over time, and I was just looking for signs as to whether, I'm going to be allowed to stay and stay in whatever kind of situation, witness protection program, whether they possibly had ideas of reactivating me. All of this was all up in the air eventually. They thought they got enough out of me just by me telling them everything I knew.
You introduced us at the beginning then to to a young man who came to believe in the principles of communism and the Soviet system. And now we come full circle at the end of this story to how God then reaches in to your life. How did he get your attention? How did God enter into the life of Jack Barsky?
This happened in Princeton, New Jersey. And I hired a new assistant, and she was this very aggressive on her way in, telling me and whoever else wanted to hear that she was a believer in Jesus Christ. In Princeton, New Jersey, in modern Princeton, New Jersey, you just don't do that anymore. And, you know, she was fearless. And so I took this, you know, I took it in, but this wasn't really, it wasn't a big deal to me, ultimately. I really did wonder what put that glow on her face, because she was such a calm individual with such a glow on her face. And I once asked her, how come you seem happy all the time? And she said, well, this is because of Jesus. And, you know, I was just like, I wasn't doing it openly, but I was rolling my eyes virtually, because how can somebody be happy just because she believes in somebody she can't talk to? But the turning point was really when I asked her one time, I knew she was in Bible school, and I asked her to share with me an essay that she wrote, so I could determine, you know, how good a writer she is, and maybe that there might be other opportunities in the company. I had a habit of doing that. So she pulled out an essay from the Book of Ruth, or about the Book of Ruth, and so I read it. Kind of odd, the Book of Ruth, give that to a middle-aged white guy. I read it, and I looked at it, and I said, you know, it's pretty well written, but I don't know if it does the original justice. So, she took about 5 seconds, and she had a Bible on my desk. She says, there, read it. So I read it, and you know, and this slowly evolved to a point where I actually showed some interest in visiting her church. But just before that, and that is really important, she told me, you ought to listen to this radio program. It's called Let My People Think. Well, this is the Rabbi Zacharias program.
Yes.
It's still being broadcast. Rabbi disabused me very quickly of my notion that Christianity is only for the feeble-minded and the people who can't take care of themselves. This is what we were taught back in East Germany,
sure.
And I had not yet completely shed that kind of prejudice, but Rabbi was so incredible. He's so incredibly intelligent, and he made a really, really strong argument. Then I went to visit Shauna's church, and the pastor taught, his message was about the love of God, and I had become a rather lovesick puppy. My marriage had fallen apart, my kids were about to move out of the house, and I had nothing left in life. And so here's this man talking about the love of God, and I actually went up to him after the service was over, and I spoke to him, and he gave me a couple more books to read. And this is the moment I describe in the book. It's an odd moment to choose, but, you know, God, you know, he picks his moments. I knew that he was real. I knew that Jesus was real. It just hit me at one point when I was waiting for my playing partner to hit a ball at a golf course. You know, everybody has their own story, and, you know, this is certainly not super dramatic, but at that point, I felt, the need, the urge to give my life to Jesus, which I did a couple of weeks after in a service in the very same church.
We have been following along on a truly one-of-a-kind journey, that of Mr. Jack Barsky, the remarkable man behind the stunning story of Cold War intrigue and redemption, detailed in the book Deep Undercover, My Secret Life and Tangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. And Jack, I know that I've seen the book in multiple places where fine books are sold, but is there a website where people can go not only to grab a copy, but to read more about you and your ministry as well?
Well, I have a personal website. I'm not offering the book for sale there, but there are links, and you know, the book can be bought at Amazon. But if you want to get in touch with me, you can. Website is really easy. It's jackbarsky.com.
Thank you so much for taking the time today, Jack. What an amazing story.
You're welcome. And when do I get to come visit you in Montana?
You're most welcome anytime, brother. You just stop by, okay?
Okay, all right.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.